Trying to get coaching cycles started and feeling like you just can't make it work? I've got the email course for you. Realistic Coaching Cycles is a mini course sent right to your inbox. It's 5 days of short videos that will teach you exactly what you need to do to start coaching cycles, document your work with a teacher, and help them implement the learning you've done together. Get it for free at buzzingwithmissb.com/cycles and start your coaching cycles today. Hey coach, I know you're out there hustling to get into classrooms and provide feedback that actually improves instruction, but meeting your teacher's needs when you're looking at a stack of sticky notes is just about impossible. I want to share a coaching tool that I know you'll love. DigiCoach is an app you can use on your phone, designed for busy coaches like you and your administrators too. It's the perfect way to record your observations and notes when you visit a classroom, collect data about what's going on at your school, and differentiate your coaching support based on the patterns you see. Some of my favorite features include the reports and DigiCoach's pre-written strategies and coaching tips to provide specific feedback and help in those moments when you just don't know what to say. Ready to check it out and make your workload so much lighter? Head to digicoach.com and tell them Miss B sent you to try it out for free and provide actionable feedback to your teachers. Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Hey, Coach, and welcome to episode 180, Differentiation as an Engagement Strategy with Dr. Shyma Cortez. Today, we are continuing our little mini-series that we started last week about coaching for engagement. Last week, we talked about some specific strategy that we can use for engagement. And then this week, we're going to dig into differentiation as a way to get kids engaged. Sometimes the reason kids are not engaged is because they literally cannot do what we're asking them to do. And so that's where differentiation comes in. So my guest today is Dr. Shyma Cortez, and she's going to help us dig into how we can support differentiation in the classroom and what that can look like. And she has so many great examples of this. Now, before we quit, or before I get into the episode, I don't know why I said before we quit. Before I quit introducing this topic, I want to remind you of my mini coaching cycles crash course. You can grab it buzzingwithmissb.com/cycles, and that is free. And it will walk you through the 5 steps you can follow to conduct a really simple, short coaching cycle. Doesn't have to be complicated. Let's just get in there and get them done. And you can even make coaching for engagement your focus, your goal with the teacher. So these are going to give you some great ideas in this episode today about how you can coach for engagement. And we're going to keep digging into this topic again next week. Let's go ahead and welcome our guest today to the podcast. So let's welcome Dr. Shyma Cortez to the podcast.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. I'm glad we could get this arranged. And I would love for people to get to know you a little bit before we get started on the shop talk. So if you could introduce yourself briefly, I would love to learn a little bit about who you help and how you spend most of your time and energy at work.
Okay. I'm Dr. Shyma Cortez. I am an instructional reading coach. I've been doing that this is my 5th year. I spend most of my time with supporting K-5 literacy teachers, and we spend a lot of time doing collaborative planning. I try to get into classrooms as much as possible to support them through coaching cycles, observations, walkthroughs, whatever it is that my teachers really need. I also do pull groups, so I spend time working with the kiddos as well.
Awesome. And then I would also love to know, this is kind of a fun getting to know you question, what is your go-to movie, TV show, or book? Something that you go back to over and over again.
A TV show? This is going to show like my kiddie side, I guess, or my nerd side. I really love the show Avatar: The Last Airbender. It's one of my favorite shows, and I have all the graphic novels and books and stuff that go with the show. So when I'm feeling kind of down, I just kind of watch that, and it brings me comfort. I like that show.
I love that. It's your go-to show and fandom, right? It's like all in one.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, so let's talk about engagement, because this episode today is about differentiation as an engagement strategy, basically, as a way that we are making sure that our kids have the opportunity to be engaged. So how can you, if you could explain to us a little bit about how differentiation is related to engagement, that would be great.
So before talking about how it's related, I think we need to define what differentiation is. Mm-hmm. So for me, differentiated instruction is very much like student aware instruction, right? Understanding the needs of your kids and then being able to adapt based on the needs of your students. And you can differentiate the content, what they're learning, the process, how they're learning it, and then the product or how they're showing you what they've learned. And I think that differentiation is definitely related to engagement because then students can have a more authentic way of accessing the content because you're meeting their needs, right? And I think it adds to the trust and culture of the classroom as well because you're considering their needs as part of your instruction. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, if you have like a high population of ESOL students and understanding their language needs, you can incorporate like dual language books as part of your content. I know we all have our curriculum and things that we're supposed to use, but we as teachers can have that, take that opportunity to differentiate our content or based on what the interests of our students are, based on their culture, their language needs. And I think that also as far as engagement, the process, Kagan structures are a great way to differentiate the process of how you're teaching, that think, pair, share, mix, pair, share, getting them up out of their seats, especially if you have a lot of ADHD kiddos, right? I have ADHD and I cannot sit for a long period of time. In fact, I'm fidgeting right now off screen. You can't see that. So I have my fidgets and my tools to help keep me focused. So those are also things that you can provide for kiddos as part of their learning, because it is really hard to stay seated for a really long time, especially our little ones, right? Mm-hmm. Like kindergarten and first grade. They haven't learned all those coping strategies yet to be able to sit and focus for a long time. I think that it breaks up the monotony of sitting and giving them multiple opportunities to engage with each other through conversation. As far as the process, sometimes also adding in that think, pair, share for those kiddos that if you call on them, they just kind of stare at you. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know what to say. Like, they know the answer, but they're not really sure. If you give them that time to like share with a friend, and then you see them all talking and engage with whatever question it is you've asked. Then you can call on them. They feel, okay, I feel more confident now to respond because I had a chance to affirm my response with a buddy. And then also, I think that it when you differentiate your instruction, you consider the needs of your kids, you see the buzz, or you can see and feel the buzz of learning happening in your classroom, right? The kids are not just sitting and kind of just waiting for you to pull a random stick, mm-hmm. essentially. You can feel the learning happening. You can see it. You can hear it. Because I think that especially in a literacy classroom, it shouldn't be quiet. There should be discussion. There should be, you're hearing them sounding out words if you're doing foundational literacy and that kind of thing. I hope that answered the question in a bit of a roundabout way.
Yes. Lots of connections between differentiation and engagement, which is logical, right? Because kids who are supported in doing what we're asking them to do are more likely to do it. We'll have given them the tools and the skills and the supports that they need to actually cognitively engage with the content that we're asking them to engage with.
Yes.
So then you mentioned a couple of reasons in your your introduction to differentiation, but what are some of the reasons that we need to differentiate for students? Maybe some of the student needs that they have that we are kind of responding to with different, product, process, content delivery?
Well, I mean, the reasons for differentiation are simple, right? We have so many different learners in our classroom. And mm-hmm. that, I think, can be one of the reasons why differentiation can the concept can be so overwhelming for teachers. Like, I have ESOL students. I have students with varying disabilities. I have gifted students in my classroom. I have students that are coming from poverty or have experienced trauma. Like, how do I instruct them in that? Because they bring all that with them to the classroom, right? So, like, the list goes on. The reasons for differentiation are our kids, right? Because they are all different. They're all different learners and they all have these different needs. Specifically, students who just as a disabled person myself, as having ADHD, that's something that's kind of central to my heart as a teacher, because students with disabilities, it can be difficult to, it can seem really overwhelming, like this piece, like how do I include them and how do I teach them? How do I get them to engage, especially when the variation of disabilities can be so wide? And it can be easy to kind of relegate that responsibility to the special education teacher. Like, oh, they when they come in, they do the differentiation. Mm-hmm. But really, we're all responsible for that kiddo that's in our class, right? The special mm-hmm. education teacher, the regular education teacher. I just wanted to say that. So I think one of the ways, at least as an ADHD person, like let's say going to the carpet, that's something that our primary teachers do. Because differentiation is also the physical environment, not just the academic part. So a lot of times we talk about full body listening, or we're trying to make all the kiddos sit a certain way on the carpet to show I'm learning, or I'm ready to learn. When really not all kids are going to find that accessible. I know that I can't sit a certain way for a really long time on a carpet as a grown up. So the kiddos also have that. So even differentiating how they can sit on the carpet, like maybe some kids will sit crisscross applesauce. Some kids can sit with their legs straight, some with their legs to the side. Maybe the kiddo doesn't want to come to the carpet and they want to stay seated at their chair. That's okay. You can differentiate that way as well. For students that might have difficulty with, you know, occupational therapy, might need occupational therapy because they need work on their pencil grasp. The students can incorporate technology. They can respond. I know at my school, we have the benefit of being one-to-one. So they can like record on their iPad their responses with their group. And then you can access that content later. They can have it there accessible. They can also write. If they have difficulty with writing, they can type on the iPad as well. And then it also saves it, so then they can refer to it later, which I think is a really cool thing. So there's lots of different ways I think you can use technology to help you differentiate. You can also differentiate like the text that the students are reading. So let's say your benchmark is Central IDEA. That doesn't necessarily mean they all have to be reading the same text. It could be something differentiated by, you know, the level of the of what skill they're working on and what they would also like to learn about. And I think that technology really does help in that area. And what can that look like? So it can look like technology being incorporated to help the kiddos. It can look like us being more understanding of the sensory needs and the physical needs of our students in the classroom. It can look like tiering your questions. So for example, not to say that we're going to like water down the questions that we're going to give the kids. It's more like, for example, if I have a question for a kiddo that is compare and contrast these two characters in a specific text, let's say, and I know this student is reading several years below grade level, we might start with, let's identify who the characters are. Yeah. Tell me character A, character B. Tell me about this character. And we might do a T chart and we're writing notes about the one character. And then we write notes about the other one. Okay, now tell me, how are they the same? How are they different? Whereas with another kid, I can just say, compare and contrast these two characters. With this kiddo, I might have to go to the T chart and all the different sides before they can get to that. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because they just needed that extra support. And it didn't take me long to do it as far as tiering my questions, but I think that has to be intentionally planned also when you're actually doing your planning. Because you start with your benchmarks, but also thinking about, okay, which questions can I ask my kids? How can I ask those questions? Which ones am I going to ask certain students? And really thinking critically about that. Tiering your questions can also be a way to differentiate for the kiddos to get them to be able to access the content, because mm-hmm. we want them to all access that benchmark or that grade level benchmark. But how we get there is that differentiation process.
Okay, so I really love some of the examples that you gave there. And I want to go back to something that you mentioned. I think it was like the three different kind of categories of places that you can differentiate. I think you said products, right? Like what the actual what students actually create to show their learning, right? Yes. The mode of content, the way it's instructed. Can you talk a little bit more about those and kind of define them like really just clearly so people can kind of get in their head, okay, this is what, like whenever I'm looking at my school day, this is how yes. this, you know, could look.
So as far as the content goes, I think that's, as a literacy person, as a literacy teacher, you're talking about what the children are learning. So our benchmark is going to be the same. So if my benchmark again is Central IDEA, I'm teaching nonfiction, but let's say when they're working in their groups and like, I know these kids really like sharks or these kids really like robots or something. I can find different texts. The way that I'm teaching and doing my mini lesson, I can use my text about, I don't know, running or something. Mm-hmm. And then I'm modeling, this is how you figure out the central idea. But then when I release you into your pairs, you can each read about something that you're interested in. That mm-hmm. sounds really scary, but we have so many different like articles and things we can find online now.
Right.
Listen, when I first started, we didn't have that kind of access to different texts and things.
No, we did not.
Right. Like I didn't even have curriculum maps.
Yeah, I had I had the standards from the state, and we did not even have textbooks, which was actually illegal.
No, that's scary. I did have textbooks, and we did have our standards and things. Like I started out as a sped teacher, so mm-hmm. the access to certain resources is a little different mm-hmm. sometimes. But content is really, for me, is like what the kids are reading, right? Mm-hmm. And even like, it doesn't have to be an article. You can chunk it into like these task cards instead that makes it more manageable for the kids. Like sometimes if they see like this huge long thing, mm-hmm. it's like, oh my gosh, that's so scary. I don't want to read all of that. Especially if it's like a packet. Ooh, freaks mm-hmm. them out, right?
I don't want to read a packet. I love to read, but I don't want to read a packet. Nobody wants to read a packet.
No, I hate packets. But you can just take the same article, chunk it into pieces, mm-hmm. and then like pair that paragraph with the question, mm-hmm. and you're differentiating that way. It's the same article. They don't need to know that. They mm-hmm. just know it's in little task cards, and you can play scoot or do a carousel around the room. That's more of like the how part. I'm getting into the process.
You're planning a lesson now is what you're doing.
Yes. Right. But about how can I get the kids to learn this instead of them just sitting, reading, and then answering questions? Because a lot of times literacy can kind of turn into that, like the literacy block, or like we're reading another passage and answering questions. Yay. Literacy can be so fun if you like really engage the kids with what they like want to read. And I know a lot of us sometimes don't have a lot of flexibility in being able to change the content. Sometimes we have to use that specific curriculum. So it's mm-hmm. a little difficult to differentiate sometimes with that, depending on your district and the requirements and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But the process, those Kagan structures, oh my gosh, they're so helpful, right? Talking about the carousel, posting the questions around the room, the kids can go in pairs mm-hmm. around the room instead of having to sit at their desk, being able to work with a buddy, think about the question, share with their pair, and then share out. Doing a mixed pair share so they can talk to different kids in the room. So they're not always trying to buddy with the same kids and they get to know each other. Mm-hmm. That process can be really helpful. And then the product where they're showing you what they know, right? And for example, write, a lot of times it's answering questions. If it's an open-ended response and like writing is really scary, especially I haven't looked too much into this, but I feel like, because ADHD is near to my soul. A lot of times you have difficulty with writing, and writing is really overwhelming because of the executive functioning that's related to writing, and so much, it's the cognitive load of it can mm-hmm. be so much. Providing them with some kind of stem or sentence starter. I know that's more of a scaffold, but on also our paragraph frame. So it's not as scary mm-hmm. when they're producing that product for you, or having them respond to a recording on their iPad or something. They're showing you what they know.
Yes.
The benchmark isn't that I have to write what the central idea is. I just have to determine it and tell you, and I have to show you that I can determine the central idea. It doesn't necessarily mean that I have to write it out,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that just depends on the kids, and identify the relevant details that go with it, or however it is that your benchmark is worded. But the product part, I think, can really be really exciting opportunities for like different projects, that the kids can do. They can, writing a Facebook status is a little, I think, old. that probably would have been exciting for me as a kid, but maybe even doing like little videos or things like that where they can show what they know can be really fun, I think, for the kids, depending on, of course, on which benchmark you're teaching and what the outcomes of the benchmark are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Like in your example earlier about comparing, you know, you can have kids sort characteristics, and that is comparing, right? Are they similarity? Are they a difference? Or you can have them writing a whole compare contrast paragraph. And it's just different yes. ways of demonstrating that they have learned this standard and that they can explain it. And they're just demonstrating that learning in different ways. And that's your product. Yeah.
Yes.
I love that. So yeah, I think that, thank you so much for clarifying those, the content, the process, and the product. And those are three areas that we can think about whenever we're supporting teachers in differentiation, in terms of like opportunities that they have to differentiate.
Yes.
And then that depends on your kids, right? Whether they need the content differentiated, whether they need the product differentiated. And I would say that differentiating the process is pretty standard. I mean, we should be doing this, you know, yes. We provide different opportunities for kids to learn. Like some kids need manipulatives, some kids don't. Yes. We have to respond to what they need, you know, whenever they are doing the work. We need to notice these patterns and observe and really get to know our kids as learners, as well as people, so that we can provide them with the tools that they need. And that's something I used to talk about with my students all the time. I remember one year I had a student who had macular degeneration and it was pretty extreme. I mean, her vision was, it was going, it was really, it was, it's a horrible, you know, disease.
Yes, it is.
And so she had, you know, like a little dome over her, you know, that she could, like a little glass magnifying dome that she could roll over her pages. And she had like a special screen because this is all in olden days. So it was like a whole computer thing that had to be set up in my classroom. Yes. And you could put pages underneath it and it would, you know, change the, you know, it was on like green on black or black. I mean, she could choose yes. the way if she wanted it to look. Oh, mm-hmm. really? Okay. Yeah.
I also had a student with, yeah, it was mm-hmm. huge. It would just take yeah. up. She didn't want to use it because it does take up the whole desk. So yeah, I understand.
Exactly. So and we had to have, and so every year we had these conversations and that was a great example to students because they'd be like, oh, well, you know, why is she using this really cool little dome thing? You know? And it's like, well, everybody gets what they need. And yes. here, everybody gets what they need to be successful. I wear glasses. You don't. If I put glasses on everybody in the room, because I have to wear glasses to read, everybody would not be getting what they need.
Yes.
Right? That would actually hurt some people. Some people need this to learn. Other people need that to learn. Everybody's going to get what they need in here. And so that was kind of a conversation that we had because I know that a lot of teachers can be kind of like, well, how am I going to explain why they're doing this and why they're doing that? Just if it's like a matter of standard practice, they get over it. The kids get used to it immediately. If I mean, especially if you're differentiating by interest, then they immediately kind of understand, oh, this is better for me. I get to read the thing I like.
You know? That reminds me of flexible seating when it like mm-hmm. was like, I don't want to say it was a fad because I think that it is important, but it kind of became all the rage on like Pinterest mm-hmm. and everyone's like buying all these things. And yeah. and that really flexible seating really depends on the needs of the kid because the flexible seating you're using might not work for the needs of that kid. So if you go out and you buy, I don't know, 20 bouncy balls, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you have 20 kids bouncing and you're like, oh my gosh, this is not right. working. But really it's because all of them don't need a bouncy ball. Maybe mm-hmm. they need to just be able to sit on the carpet while they're working mm-hmm. or maybe they need to stand right. In the back of the room. And I know that one of my students was having like in small group, he was having, and I did a video on it because it was just so impactful for me having these conversations with the kids and having them tell you what they need. Mm-hmm. And even the littles can actually verbalize these things through modeling, like you were talking about and having those conversations. But he was just having a really hard time and he was like parkouring off the back of the walls. And I'm like, mm-hmm. what is going on? This was not happening before. And, you know, we had a very heart-to-heart conversation. He said, I need to sit in the front of the room. Mm-hmm. I need to be like next to you. And after each section, can you tell me if I've done it right? Mm-hmm. Because he needed that immediate feedback of if I'm doing it right before he could continue. And once I did that, it was like night and day with him. And he's an ADHD as well. So he was parkouring off the back. So I thought, oh, if I put him in the back, he'll have time to like move around mm-hmm. and he won't distract anybody. But that wasn't what he needed. That's what mm-hmm. I thought he needed. So when I had that conversation with him, he said, I need to be in the front. I need to be next to you. And I need you to tell me this, if I did it right or wrong before I can move on to the next thing. And it was so much better after that. So I think adding in the conversation of having this, modeling that for kids, and then also having them articulate what is the best learning position for you. Mm-hmm. Is this like, you know, whatever strategies did it work well? Even I've seen teachers do like after centers where they meet with the kids and mm-hmm. they get to talk about their learning and if that specific center actually worked to help them learn what they were doing. It's like, well, this game, I didn't really understand it. Or I'm like, I don't really like the task cards. This is kind of boring for me. Can I do something else? Or I don't really like doing summaries after I read my AR book. Ugh. You know, you need some kind of accountability piece, they say. But having the kids involved in those conversations, I think can help you better determine as a teacher what differentiation is working, what strategies are working, which ones are not, I think.
I love that. So that's one way that we can kind of determine if engagement, you know, is, or if differentiation is working in our classrooms is by talking to our kids, you know, getting some feedback from them saying, is this helping you? You know,
yes.
Are there any other indicators of engagement working or differentiated working? And is improved engagement a good indicator of differentiation working?
I think that to identify when differentiation is working, I think that improved engagement is an indicator of that, but also you should see an improvement in your data, right? Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes data is like a four-letter word. It's like, it's scary. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, especially with the, and I understand why with the connection that it has to like state testing and everything that comes with that. But observational data as a teacher can be so valuable if you're like watching as the students are learning and seeing how this differentiation strategy is working in your room. You should see an increase in responses. You should see, like, feel that buzz in the room of the students learning the variation in their responses to you as well, when they're actually able to respond in a way that is accessible for them, whether it's through the iPad with a paragraph stem or sentence starters. When they're talking to each other, sometimes those accountable talk stems can be really helpful too, because they don't necessarily know how to respond to each other in an academic conversation. Let me see. And also, when you're tiering your questions, you should see that the students are actually able to respond to those questions now. Whereas before, let's say you just gave this blanket question and then you get all the stares. You're like, oh, that's really easy to see. Right. Well, that didn't work, right? That didn't work. Mm-hmm. But also, when the data from formative assessments, from exit tickets, I think can be really powerful. Depending on if they're open-ended or multiple choice, you can easily bucket which kids got it, which kids kind of got it, and which kids, they're still struggling, you know, and that helps to inform your reteaching and your intervention, because differentiation can happen during whole group and small group and during your intervention time, right? It's something that's embedded throughout the day. And your groups should be flexible based on the data that you've collected. And then once you create those flexible groups based on skills and things like that, when you're working with them in that small group, you can also differentiate there too. Like, maybe I'm working on task cards with this group, but the next group coming in maybe has a more difficult, more complex article, or maybe a more complex task to do, depending on what their levels are. It just really depends, again, on the needs of the kids. But you're not going to know what the needs of the kids are without careful observation and without analysis of that data. And I think that that is also where a coach can come in and really help you, especially if you're like a newer teacher, you know, don't necessarily know which differentiation strategies to use. A coach can come in and observe, see how the differentiation strategies you're using are working with the kiddos, and help you analyze student work. They can help you analyze data from formative assessments. So I think that for understanding if differentiation is working in your room, coaches are invaluable in that, because you don't have to do it alone. Right? So differentiation can be scary, but especially if you have an experienced math coach, you have an experienced literacy coach, or maybe just a coach that's doing both, because some coaches do have to do both subject areas, you can definitely reach out to that person, and they're an invaluable tool to help you determine if it's actually working or not as a second pair of eyes. Because you're in the middle of teaching and you're going and you're doing all these things, but a coach can sit in the room and like watch and see things that you might not necessarily see as a teacher because you're in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, they can record their data as well, their observational data, and then share that with the teacher and kind of give them a perspective. Because you're right, you don't see every little thing that happens. And then at the end, you're like, I think this went well, or I don't know if it went well. It can kind of leave you a little fuzzy. But if you have that information from a third perspective, it can really kind of give you a picture of what was going on in your room and whether things were working at the time.
Yes.
So then based on, you talked a little bit about a coach going in to support the teacher, and that's, you know, that's who our audience is instructional coaches. So what are some things that you've done to support teachers in differentiating in their classrooms, especially if they're kind of reluctant or overwhelmed to try it, they're not really sure how to go about it? What have been some things that have worked for you?
I think the first thing, of course, you're building rapport with your teachers, and then leading the conversation on what is working in their classroom and what is not. Because I think that when you have a culture of learning and a kind of growth mindset at your school, and that can depend on your admin and that sort of thing. But that aside, I think it's easier to have those conversations when the school culture is set around learning and having a growth mindset and coaches coming in as support, that we're not there to, like, you know, be spies or whatever.
Yeah.
But in having conversations with the teachers at my school, they're very open and like, this is working for me, this is not working. How can I help this area of my classroom that isn't working? So that's when I would come in and I can do an observation, tally certain things if that's not working, like maybe certain students are disengaged from the lesson, let's say. And then I'm in the room watching, I can kind of see, maybe figure out, help the teacher figure out why that is. And then once we can figure out the why, then we can determine what strategies would best work in the classroom. And then that's when I can come in, if they're comfortable with me coming in to model a specific strategy, or if they've already been using, well, let's say they've been doing some Kagan structures in their classroom, but they're kind of like shaky with it. Like, can you come in and teach with me? We could do a co-teach kind of situation. Or if we can also do video coaching, like where they record their lesson and then we come in together later during planning, and then we watch it and we, you know, discuss it together and see like what worked, what didn't work, what were your glows and grows, right? Mm-hmm. Where and what our next steps are. So those are just different ways, but just being in there to support the teacher in the way that they want to be supported and not in the way that like I think it should go, because really the learning and the growing should be led by the teacher, in my opinion.
Yeah, I love the video coaching. That's one of the strategies that I have really grown to love over the years, because it is such a great way to help teachers reflect on what's going on. Kind of like you were saying, another pair of eyes in the classroom. Yes. But that pair of eyes is like this impartial recorder that's going to record everything. And then you can look at it and go, I just didn't see that. I mean, when you see yourself, it's always different than what you imagined it to be, you know? So yeah, I think that's a really great strategy for this specific area, because they can see whether kids are responding to certain things, whether kids are using the differentiation strategy as it was shared with them. Maybe they're not even using it. Like I have known people who would differentiate by giving kids like a 100s chart, for example, you know, during math. And it just sits there on the table because they never taught the kid how to use it. You know what I mean? Yes. So it'll sit there on the table for like months, and then they go, "Well, he never uses it." Well, you never taught him.
You know,
like,
so how to use it?
Yeah, does he know?
The video is very apparent. Oh,
yeah, he literally has no clue what he, he's just poking at stuff. So yeah, it's really helpful to give people a picture of what's going on, because we all have blind spots. All of us do, you know, and you just can't avoid it, because this is a very human profession. And so you kind of focus on the things that are really important to you, but then you maybe don't notice the things that are eluding you, you know, year after year, they just get away from us. So I think that's a great tip. So if people want to keep learning from you, where can they do that?
Well, I'm mainly on Instagram at Dr. Cortez Writes. I have tried to post to other social media platforms, but that's where I am mostly.
It's hard to maintain more than one spot. I mean, it's like a lot of work. And then you're like, what is the return on this? You know?
Yes. But Instagram has a great teaching and coaching community of educators. It's just really awesome. You can learn from so many different people, and I've met so many different people like you. Mm-hmm. And it's been so much PD, like micro PD. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. I love Instagram. I think it's great.
I agree. Whenever I am trying to learn more about something, I search for the hashtag, I hunt down some accounts, and then I start just paying attention to that. So it kind of like creeps into my brain without me having to do a whole lot of effort. It just like puts itself in there. It's so nice.
Yes. I love it. I love how accessible it is.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This was great information, and I'm sure coaches are going to be better prepared to support their teachers in differentiation.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
That was so much great information from Dr. Cortez, and I'm so glad that she joined us on our podcast today to share about her experience in supporting teachers in differentiation. It's a long road, and not everybody is always ready to start down that path right away, but you can definitely create the opportunity for the conversations, and the video coaching strategy was such a great recommendation in this situation, and I think that she really gave us a lot of things to think about in terms of how we can differentiate and what that can look like for different kids. So I hope you got a lot out of this episode. If you are looking for how you can provide teachers with feedback about your observed lessons or even video coaching lessons, I have some classroom observation forms that could be very helpful to you if you go to buzzingwithmissb.com and search in the shop for classroom observation forms. I actually have placed on each form where you can record data. And then it has questions that will help you discuss that data with a teacher and come up with some good reflections and some next steps together. So definitely check those out. You also can grab for free my mini coaching cycles crash course. That's at buzzingwithmissb.com/cycles, because that course is going to help you get into those classrooms, work with teachers, and so you can actually use engagement as your focus and support teachers in modeling, co-teaching, visiting a colleague, all of these great strategies once you get in the door. So next week, we're going to continue our work on engagement, and we're going to talk about coaching for engagement with Gretchen Bridger. She's going to help us dig into some specific strategies that we can use. We kind of started getting into that today, but we're going to dig into it even more on the next episode. And until then, happy coaching. Thank you. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching!